This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. And tonight's guest, Mr. Michael Hannon, ex-Los Angeles policeman. Tonight's subject, how a policeman faces crime. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Continuing our look at crime this week on Night Call, we have standing by in Los Angeles, California, Mr. Michael Hannon, an ex-policeman of the Los Angeles Police Department. Mr. Hannon was suspended recently from his position after serving for 7 years by Chief Parker because of an alleged conflict between his police duties and his personal civil rights activities. If you have a comment to make or would like to ask a question of Mr. Hannon on how a policeman faces crime, give us a call here at our national Night Call number. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number again, area code 313-846-6601. The operator is now on duty. Our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. And remember, if you wish, you may make the call collect. Mr. Hannon, what is it like to be a policeman?
Well, of course, I have very mixed feelings about my job. On the one hand, you know, you feel you can really be a socially useful person in the police service. But then on the other hand, I've got some real reservations about the way police work is done based on my 7 years of having done it. The whole process just doesn't seem to me to bear equally on all elements of the population.
What do you think crime is, from a policeman's point of view?
I think that criminals, you know, people sometimes talk about criminals as if they were some kind of special breed of animal that were different from the rest of us. Well, in my experience and in my belief, I think criminals are people who commit crimes, you know, people who have violated some statute or ordinance, and they're just ordinary people that have committed a certain act that the law condemns.
Do you think there's a difference between a lawbreaker and a criminal?
Well, I don't find such a difference. Perhaps there are some people whose lives develop into patterns where they keep repeatedly breaking laws. Maybe you would like to catalog this kind of a person as a criminal. But I think this kind of labeling makes you stop looking at the fact this is a person. He's a human being just like other human beings. And that because he has these special patterns of behavior, for instance, he has to be treated in a certain way by the law and by the state, but nevertheless, he's a human being. And I don't like these kind of labels that make us dismiss human beings as objects. You know, if you hang a certain kind of a label on a person, this is a criminal. Well, it's so much easier to dismiss him as an object and forget that he's a human being.
Do you think that criminals are sick?
Well, some criminals certainly are sick. Narcotics addicts, for instance, alcoholics. For some reason or other, our society defines these kinds of illnesses as crimes and tries to cure them by punishment, which certainly seems to me the most futile kind of an endeavor. But altogether, I would hate to make such a generalization as criminals are sick.
Do you think, from a policeman's point of view, that a human being can be... that a policeman can be considered a human being in the sense that will he still have human feelings after a day on the beat?
Well, certainly. You know, for the same reason that I object to cataloging certain human beings as criminals and dismissing them as some kind of objects and forgetting that they're human beings, I object to the same kind of cataloging being done about policemen. We are people, you know. We have the same kind of feelings. You know, I've got 4 kids that relate to me as daddy, not as a policeman. Of course, we're human beings and react very similarly to other human beings.
Do you feel that maybe the average American expects too much from the average policeman?
No, I don't. After all, you know, police work, perhaps 80-90% of the time, you're not really doing too awfully much. Now, 10 or 15% of the time, you've got a difficult, rather dangerous job. That's why they pay me $715 a month. And, you know, if I'm afraid, I should go sell shoes.
What about the average American and his understanding of the role that the policeman should play in his society? Do you think they have that understanding?
Well, I think there's a great conflict about the role that a policeman should play in the society. Different people tend to look at this role differently. Now, the courts, for instance, and most attorneys, seem to view a policeman as the agent of the court, as a person who is hired by society to enforce the laws as other people, namely the legislature and the courts, prescribe these laws. And I find this rather different from the way most policemen see their own social role. And this is one of the conflicts I have with myself and with my job, because I think the policemen are in error. And I'm generalizing now. Policemen are in error when they look at their social role as one of being people with a general duty to protect life and property, and therefore people who are entitled to just use the laws as tools to this end. Now, you see this kind of philosophy reflected when men like Chief Parker, for instance, in Los Angeles, rail at the courts for handcuffing the police and tying their hands with all kinds of procedural rules. It really isn't a policeman's function to say what the rules ought to be. The policeman's functions are simply to enforce whatever rules that are. Now, as citizens, privately, off the job, we've got as much say as any other citizen over what the rules should be and how they should be. But as policemen, our function is simply to carry out the laws as they are prescribed, and not to try to circumvent them, and not to try to get around the guarantees that the courts put on civil liberties.
In your case,
this kind of gets us into an interesting area, because, you know, every society has to strike some kind of a balance between a maximum interest in protecting life and property and a maximum interest in preserving the individual liberties of people.
Even a criminal.
Well, criminals are people. We agreed on that. You know, you can kind of define this problem by showing the extremes. At one extreme, you could require warrants before any kind of an arrest, so that a policeman would have to go to a magistrate or to a court and present facts justifying him in apprehending and incarcerating a person. Now, this would be one extreme, an extreme that would put the maximum emphasis on protecting the individual from any interference by the state. At the other extreme, the extreme that would most efficiently protect property, you know, you could require everybody to tattoo an identification number on his forehead and carry a little book around that, in which he would record every hour where he was at each hour of the day.
This would help policemen, then.
Huh?
This would help policemen.
Well, of course, you know, it would make the job duck soup, and it would enable policemen to much more efficiently apprehend burglars and so forth. But nobody in this country would put up with such a situation. So somewhere in between there, somewhere in between these two extremes, this society and every society has got to strike a balance. Now, the problem is that different social groups have natural interests in striking this balance at a different place, in moving it more to the left, to the right, so to speak. For instance, wealthy people since they've got more property to protect, they're more interested in maximizing the effort to protect property. And since they generally have more influence in the community, are generally people that are less interfered with by the police.
Are you saying that policemen give preferential treatment to some members of our society?
Well, yes. Yes, they really do. At least in my experience, there's a tremendous difference between the way laws are enforced in working class or especially Negro areas, and in more affluent parts of town. For one thing, you can look at the enforcement of laws against gambling. You know, this is a petty offense. The last statistical abstract I saw showed some 1,100 gambling arrests in one of the police divisions over a year's period, which was in the Negro part of town. And 8 in Hollywood division for the same year. Now, you know and I know, there's more gambling than that goes on in Hollywood.
Our guest tonight, Mr. Michael Hannon. Our topic, How a Policeman Faces Crime. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our topic on Night Call tonight, How a Policeman Faces Crime, part of our continuing look at crime this week. Our guest, Mr. Michael Hannon. Mr. Hannon, you'll recall, is the ex-policeman from the Los Angeles Police Department who recently was suspended, and his case, I believe, is going on to higher courts now. If you'd like to ask Mr. Hannon a question on policeman's role in society or some of the problems that a policeman may have, give us a call here at our national night call number. Now, the number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make the call collect. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open, and the operator is accepting calls. Area code 313-846-6601. Mike, just before we took the break, you made a statement to the effect that policemen do not enforce the laws equally in various communities, in the sense that if a rich man breaks a law, he has a better chance of getting away with it than a poor man. Or a white man probably has a better chance of getting away with it than a Negro man. Is this what you meant to say?
In part, it's what I meant to say. You know, for 5 of the 7 years I was a policeman, I was working in a police division in the what the newspapers have been calling Watts, the area where the riot took place in Los Angeles. It's really not Watts, but that's what the papers have been calling it. And I've also worked in patrol divisions in middle-class white areas.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is, what I really had in mind was a difference in the way officers approach the public in these areas, and whether you make an arrest or you don't make an arrest, the discretionary element in police work. Very different standards are applied in the two areas I've worked in. Take, for instance, the situation where there's a bar, for instance, that's a trouble spot. It's a trouble spot because there's pills or narcotic drugs being sold there, or because homosexuals frequent the place. Well, how do the police handle this problem? Now, take a fairly affluent neighborhood, and the way it's handled there is it takes longer, it's more work. You have to put the place under surveillance. You have to perhaps put undercover operators into the place to try to find out who the actual criminal elements are and distinguish them from the ordinary guy who walks in off the street to have a beer, because you just can't take the chance in pushing around a probably influential citizen.
Why can't you take that chance as a policeman?
Because this person is articulate enough and educated enough and has enough pull and influence so that he can He can substantiate his rights, and he can make an objection to being shoved around improperly and get a hearing. Now, when I was working in the ghetto area, for instance, I remember the way bars such problems were handled. We used to go in, five or six or ten of us, and block off the door, go through the place and search everybody in the place and see what we could come up with, take all their identification outside and run it to see who had warrants, keeping the people bottled up in the meantime. And people in more affluent parts of town just wouldn't stand for this kind of procedure. This is the easy way to handle the problem, and this is the way it's done. And very little is thought of it. And when people in these areas complain, they get relatively little response to their complaints.
Do you think this might be one cause for the riots in Los Angeles? Do you think there's any justification to their charges that have been made in some quarters that police brutality is a real thing?
Well, I don't like the word police brutality. This is a semantic trap. Police brutality connotes taking somebody up an alley and breaking his fingers one at a time, and in my experience, that just doesn't go on. But there are some very, very legitimate complaints, about the use of a common drunk statute to punish contempt of cop. Just a general harassment of the public, a failure to distinguish between an honest working man and people who are engaged in violating the law. Now, this sort of thing is very common, and attitudes showing a kind of a class bias are very common.
Would you say that policemen are biased?
Yes, I definitely think they are.
Well, then we're saying that they're really human beings, aren't they?
Oh, sure.
But can they ever be non-entities as far as having opinions are concerned?
No, that's why I'm against passing rules against any kind of political activities on the part of policemen. I don't think that's the way to handle it. What I do expect of a policeman is that he develop a certain professionalism about his job, so that he's aware of his own biases, so that he compensates for them, and doesn't display them in public. Because really, we have no right to use our jobs to vent whatever our personal hang-ups are.
Mike, I now have a caller from KOWB in Laramie, Wyoming, Mr. John Howe. Hello, John. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Thank you very much, Russ. Certainly nice listening to you, Mr. Hammond. Certainly you have a great knowledge of your business being a policeman. And it's gratifying to know we have people like you in our police forces throughout the country. As you probably know or may not know, the national college debate question this year deals with more freedom in law enforcement. Now, just done beautifully in showing the indirect restriction on this question, which has been stated. Pardon me. But
could you speak just a little louder, sir?
Yes. I would like to know if you have any examples of direct restriction in enforcement of the law.
Mike?
Yeah, direct restrictions in enforcement of the law. Do you mean restrictions on the police officer?
Specifically.
Well, there has been a trend of late to apply to the states the same kind, and you know, and municipal police officers too, the same kind of restraints that have been applied to federal officers since the beginning in this country. And I think this is a very useful thing. For instance, rules against using coerced confessions were first developed in the federal courts and are now being applied to the states. The exclusionary rule of evidence, under which evidence that has been wrongfully or illegally seized is not admissible in court. These rules were developed in the federal courts to enforce the constitutional guarantees against illegal searches and seizures. Now, for a long time, while these rules were enforced in federal courts, the Supreme Court did not force the states to come up to the same standards, and now we are doing this. And I think this is a useful thing, and it's a necessary thing, because it really makes a mockery of constitutional guarantees. And I'm a strong believer in the Bill of Rights. It makes a mockery of constitutional guarantees to say you're free from this kind of improper conduct when it's federal officers doing it, but that they can turn around and allow state or city policemen to charge into your home and rummage through your belongings without search warrants and so forth.
Do they do this, Mike?
Oh, the cases are full of it. For instance, the recent couple of years old now, a case under which the federal exclusionary rule was applied to all of the states by the Supreme Court. The case was, I'll think of the name of it in a minute. But at any rate, it involved a woman in Cleveland. Officers had some information that she had policy, gambling paraphernalia in her home. And without a search warrant, they kicked the door in. She stopped them and demanded a warrant, and they flashed a piece of paper in her face and said it was a warrant, overpowered her, handcuffed her, searched the house, didn't find any policy paraphernalia, but they did find some allegedly obscene books, which they proceeded to arrest and convict her under. Now, this was a patently illegal search because the Constitution says that you can't make a search except under a warrant, and yet the state courts received this evidence even though it had been illegally obtained. Well, this was such a gross abuse, and this was such an exaggerated situation that the Supreme Court was finally forced to hold that there was no other way to make law enforcement officers abide by the law. So they held that the exclusionary rule of evidence, which excluded illegally seized evidence from the courts, was part of due process of law, and therefore the states had to abide by these same rules.
John?
Pardon me. Certainly in gangster pictures and so forth, and I use that term loosely.
Speak up, please, John.
Different situations where political and social pressures are being put on law enforcement officers throughout the country. Do you find that in your experience this is really so? Or it is mostly just rules and the interpretation of the same?
Well, I haven't found any political or social pressures on policemen in L.A., but here we have a strange situation. Perhaps we have gone too far in removing the police from any kind of direct popular pressure. There are several layers of bureaucratic fat in between the police establishment in Los Angeles and any official who's elected by the people and that the people of the city have any control over. For instance, even the chief of police, the administrative head of the department, has civil service tenure on his job and can't be removed without an elaborate procedure of bringing him to trial on specific charges and finding him guilty, and then he gets to appeal to the courts so that he is virtually unremovable. Well, this means that he's free to have the police establishment enforce the laws according to his standards, which might not necessarily be the same standards as the general community follows. Now, if you've got any faith in democracy as being a better way of organizing things than just putting all your eggs in one basket and hoping on the good faith of some official, a bureaucrat that's at the head of a police department, you want some kind of popular control over the police. Now, I think this is a very necessary thing. I think we've gone too far in Los Angeles. Now, perhaps there is a danger to be avoided here, the danger of political control, manifesting itself in graft coming into the system and so forth. But if this happens, it's the fault of the people in the community, and you get the kind of law enforcement you deserve as long as the people in the community have political control over the police. And as a believer in democracy rather than in the good faith of officials, I'm willing to take this chance.
John, I want to thank you for your comments on Night Call.
Well, thank you very much. It's been an educational experience, I'm sure.
You're very kind, John. Mr. John Howe from Laramie, Wyoming, a listener on KOWB.
Our guest tonight on Night Call, Mr. Michael Hannon. Our topic, How a Policeman Faces Crime. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our topic tonight, how a policeman faces crime. Our guest, Mr. Michael Hannon. Mr. Hannon, you'll recall, is an ex-policeman from the Los Angeles Police Department. And recently he was suspended after serving more than 7 years by Chief Parker because of an alleged conflict between his police duties and his civil rights activities. Now, if you'd like to ask Mr. Hannon a question or make a comment about law enforcement in these United States, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. Please make the call, gentle people, station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, the lines are open and the operator's on duty. And if you're driving around in your automobile tonight and you'd like to make a comment, pull over to that telephone and give us a call here. Remember, you may make it collect if you wish. Area code 313-846-6601. We invite your comment. Mike, is it possible for a policeman ever to be really neutral?
Well, I think it's an ideal one should strive for, at least while the policeman is functioning as a policeman on duty. This whole thing came up in my case over the issue of, you know, are you required to maintain this professional neutrality 24 hours a day while you're off duty and being a citizen, as well as when you're on duty and working for the state? It's an important question because whether any of us like it or not, we're living in an increasingly bureaucratized society, and more of us are going to work for the government at some level or other. So I think it's very important that public servants not be cut out of this political process. Because if we're going to have a democracy here, everybody's got to participate, and this includes public employees like policemen and school teachers and court clerks and so forth, as well as the people in private employment.
Well, now, what were your civil rights activities, Mike?
Well, specifically, activities that I was suspended for were taking part in car demonstrations. Now, nobody ever alleged that I broke any laws or that I even broke any specific regulations of the police department. My suspension was based simply on the fact that I had been at what the chief calls contentious demonstrations, and that simply being there is misconduct. There were some other. I'm a member of the Socialist Party. I also organized a rally at which Norman Thomas made a speech condemning the intervention in the Dominican Republic. And the department found this to be misconduct on the grounds that a public employee shouldn't be heard to derogate the duly elected officials of the people. Now, the whole problem involved here is that in our police department, officers with a very right-wing point of view are perfectly free to conduct their politics and their recruiting.
How do you know this?
Because I've been around it and I've seen it, and besides, we put on witnesses at my trial. We put on four officers who belong to a policeman's organization known as FIPO, which is a right-wing propaganda outfit. We put them on and out of their own mouths showed how they published articles that accused the State Department of providing prostitutes to foreign diplomats, and made political attacks on such men as the head of the state AFL-CIO Federation, and local elected officials. And these men all said that the department was quite aware of their activities. They sent copies of their material to the chief and to other ranking police officers. They'd never been criticized for this. We put these officers on as defense witnesses to show the standard that the department allowed in practice to its officers, and expected them to apply the same standard to me. Well, they refused to do this because the department evidently disapproves of my political orientation and thinks that the right-wing orientation of these other officers is perfectly all right.
Were any of the officers on the Los Angeles force members of the John Birch Society, as far as you can determine?
Yes, I know several men who claim to be members. I know that the local Birch Society coordinator, a man named John Russolo, claims that he has 2,000 dues-paying members among peace officers in Los Angeles County.
Well, now, do not the John Birchers advocate support of local police departments? Isn't this a good thing?
Well, this is, on the surface, yeah, this is a very nice thing. But let's look at what they do this for. Now, they originated the Support Your Local Police campaign, and I'll grant you that since they originated it, they have sucked some respectable people into their popular front. The New Car Dealers Association, for one. But primarily, the Birchers used the Support Your Local Police program as a vehicle for recruiting police officers into their organization. And this is the way they go about doing it. Their line is that everybody is picking on you. You know, the press is against you, the Negroes hate you, the politicians are after you, but we're on your side. We're going to back you up every step of the way, and we think you're terribly picked on, you poor police officers. And, you know, this has a certain attraction. And
do you think that policemen are picked on?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Do you think that policemen are picked on?
No, I don't think they're picked on excessively, not at all. In fact, I believe that the pressure from such organizations as the civil rights movement has accomplished some fine reforms in the way police work is carried on. One of the things it accomplished in the city of Los Angeles was the integration of the police department. When I went on the department, it was a rigidly segregated outfit. There were only certain areas of the city that Negro officers were allowed to work in, and they were never allowed to work in a radio car team, a Negro and a white officer together. But through pressure from the civil rights movement, and especially the NAACP at that time, the police department was forced to change this and to stop discriminating against its Negro personnel.
Now, Mike, you mentioned that you participated in demonstrations and that Chief Parker made some comment to the effect that he felt that this was not correct conduct for a police officer. Don't you feel that the average American, the average white American, feels that demonstrations are illegal?
Well, whether he feels it or not, the demonstrations I participated in were perfectly legal. I picketed, I carried signs, I circulated petitions, I handed out leaflets and handbills. My personal activities were quite legal. Now, it's true that that acts of civil disobedience by other people and by other groups did occur at some of the large demonstrations I was part of. But my activities were in the legal side of the demonstration, and I very carefully observed this line.
Do you think that maybe some citizens hide behind the support for their policemen, and the ones that are very vocal about this support for their local police, do you think really they're saying they like the status quo, that they're hiding behind this proclaiming of, support of police? Actually, what they're saying that they love the status quo and they don't want to change.
Yeah, I think so. I started to talk about this balance that one has to strike between a maximum emphasis on protecting civil liberties on the one hand and a maximum emphasis on protecting property on the other. Now, it's natural that the wealthier classes in society are anxious to have this balance move to the right, and the working class elements are more concerned about civil liberties than they are, relatively, about having property protected in the most efficient possible fashion. Now, the policeman, likewise, is concerned with everything that enhances his personal power and authority, because we're human beings, and human beings like that sort of thing. So their own feelings coincide with the class interests of the wealthier groups in the society.
Mike, we have a caller from KGHL in Billings, Montana, Mr. Gary Kaiser. Hello, Gary. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Yes, Russ.
It seemed like Mike has a few sour apples about Chief Parker, and I think possibly he failed to tell the listening public that policemen themselves, plus other state enforcement officers, have the right to go into trial and to have a hearing in any case of dismissal, and that they are not subject to the political pressures. And it seems to me that he was advocating that to go back to more perhaps pressure from the public and so forth, and this is what agencies have worked for years to get away from, so they could be free of pressure by the people, and so their hands would not be tied as much to do an adequate job. I wonder what Mike feels about that, and also the fact, I believe he stated, that they made more arrests perhaps in his area on poor people than on wealthy or people of the middle class. And I don't believe he could back these figures up in all areas of the country. And I'm wondering if he contends that this is the case all over.
Mike, two questions for
you. Yeah, the latter part, I really can't contend this is the case all over. I'm really personally familiar only with the city of Los Angeles. But since the city of Los Angeles is touted as one of the country's best police departments, I kind of feel like if it's different anywhere, it's probably worse. I can back up the statement about the laws being being unequally enforced from my own personal experience of 7 years of working on this department and seeing them unequally enforced. Now, as far as sour apples about the good police chief, Chief Parker is a highly political figure himself. He's transcribed radio broadcasts for the Mannion Forum, which is certainly well to the right of conservative organizations. He's participated in a Project Alert right here in Los Angeles where the hanging of Earl Warren was called for. Now, I'm very much concerned about what I consider a general massive effort on the part of right-wingers and right-wing groups to infiltrate and take over local police departments. And I see it dismayingly successful here in the Los Angeles area. And I'm concerned that it happened elsewhere. I think the police service is much too important an area of American government to abandon to such people. And I have very strong feelings about the necessity of the government to enforce its laws equally among all social groups as much as we can. And I'm not talking so much about the fact that there are probably more crimes committed poorer elements, because this is undoubtedly true. They got more social pressures on them that make them commit crimes. And the kind of crimes they commit, crimes of violence, thefts, petty thefts, robberies, these sort of things, are more easily detectable and are more often, they're more often apprehended than the kind of white-collar crime, like the manipulation of corporate stocks that you would find with wealthier elements. These things are all very true.
Gary?
There was one other element to his question, and I forgot what it was.
Gary?
He made the statement that Chief Parker would have to go through quite a process to dismiss him and to get rid of him. And I think any police officer has that same right, plus any state officer. Most of the states that I'm familiar with. Yeah, but you see, here's the problem. In many police departments, the general manager of the department, the police chief, has civil service tenure as a policeman in his permanent rank, whatever that is, be it captain or lieutenant or so forth. But he doesn't have an ironclad hold on his job as general manager of the department. He isn't permanently the general manager with the no popular control over him and no way that the people can exert pressure on him to make him enforce the rules the way they want them enforced. Now, as a person with faith in the democratic process, I believe that it's necessary that people have popular control. And I'm not afraid of democracy. And I'm not opposed to the people having control over their public servants, because I think policemen should be public servants and not the masters of the public, and certainly not an occupation army in some parts of town as the police tend to be.
Gary, I want to thank you for your comments. Can I ask you one question before you say goodnight? Are you a police officer?
I'm a patrol officer, yes.
In Billings?
No, for the state.
I see. Gary, I want to thank you for calling night call. We've enjoyed your comments. Mr. Gary Kaiser from Billings, Montana,
listener on KGHL. Our guest tonight, Mr. Michael Hannon. Our topic, How a Policeman Faces Crime. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the
you-know-who. Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
We continue our look at crime tonight, and all this week, for that matter of fact, on Night Call, our guest, Mr. Michael Hannon. Our topic, How a Policeman Faces Crime. If you'd like to ask Mr. Hannon a question on crime or about the job of a policeman, give us a call here at our national Night Call number. That's area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere, collect. Please make the call station to station. The lines are now open. We're accepting calls. Area code 313-846-6601. Let us know what you're thinking about. And Mr. Hannon, I have a caller now from Obridge, New Jersey, a listener on WBAL, a gentleman who I understand has been a policeman for 35 years, Mr. Joe Layton. Hello, Joe. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Oh, I can hardly hear you.
Joe, we can hear you well. Can you ask your question or make your comment? Joe?
Yes?
Make your comment, please, sir. We can hear you.
I disagree hardly with most of the things I could understand. I live in Old Bridge, New Jersey.
Yes, sir. Joe, do you have your radio up?
Yes.
You please turn it down.
I live in New Jersey, and I've been a policeman in Newark for 35 years.
Your question to Mr. Hannon, Joe.
I've been a detective of supervision for 27. And I feel partially qualified, just like the head of the Department of California.
Joe, if you'll turn your radio down, you'll find it'll be a little bit easier to hear. Hello? I'm sorry, we've lost contact with Mr. Layton. Mr. Joe Layton from Obridge, New Jersey, a listener on WBAL. Mike, I'm sorry we couldn't keep that conversation going there. Something happened to our connection.
Okay.
But we were... We're talking about the idea of whether or not a policeman could be neutral. Would you say that some policemen are bigots?
Yes, some policemen are bigots. Some policemen definitely have very fine attitudes in the area of race relations. whatever their private attitudes are, a police officer is obliged, while he's being a police officer, while he's on duty, to cover up any racial biases that he might have, and to be aware of his biases and make sure that they don't intrude upon his police work at all.
Well, Mike, we have a caller from WBAL now, a listener on WBAL, Miss Margaret Harmon. Hello, Margaret. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
I'd like to ask the so-called policeman if it doesn't concern him at all about the infiltration of police ranks from the other extreme. I suppose I'm what you would call one of these nasty, horrible right-wingers. But they were, I mean, much less than admitted socialists who are trying to tear down the police chief and the police department on the great city like Los Angeles.
Mike, you want to comment?
Yeah, sure. I am not an admitted socialist, madam. I am a member of the Socialist Party, and I am very proud of being a socialist. So don't say admitted, because that sounds like I'm admitting guilt about something. I'm as proud of being a socialist as you are of being a right-winger that defends the class privileges of the wealthy. On the other hand, I am a police officer, and I've been one for 7 years. Now, let's talk about this infiltration from the other extreme you're talking about. It doesn't exist. The other extreme, comparable to the John Birch Society, would be the Communist Party, and I am unaware of any members of the Communist Party who are on the police department. Now, I do know that in my experience as a police officer in the city of Los Angeles, anybody who expresses the mildest kind of liberal sentiments immediately feels the wrath of the entire police establishment. There are members of the police department who are active in the California Democratic Clubs, for instance. But they are very, very careful on the job not to let anybody know this, because as soon as they did, they would immediately start feeling official pressure. In contrast to the fact that John Birchers and people of similar ilk circulate their material all over the police station. Now, at Newton Station, where I worked for 5 years, that coffee room used to look like one of these Birchite Americanism centers. There were stacks of the Dan Smoot Report and Human Events and American Opinion and the Mannion Forum and all the rest of this trash. Every police car I worked in Newton Division prior to the election used to have 3 or 4 copies of None Dare Call It Treason thoughtfully provided in the glove compartment.
Great book.
I beg your pardon?
It's a great book. More people should read it.
Margaret?
Great book. It's a great comedy because it's the most distorted piece of garbage I think I've ever read.
Margaret,
yes.
Do you believe that policemen should have political rights?
Yes, sir, I do. I'm married to a policeman, and he's been one for 7 years also. And I know that I have to be very careful when I campaign very proudly for Barry Goldwater, because I couldn't have stickers or anything on our personal car, because the administration in Maryland, of course, is Democratic at this time. And, While I got permission from his superior that I could campaign, I of course had to play it down.
Well, is your husband allowed on off-duty hours to campaign, Margaret?
He can belong, as far as I know, he could belong to, like Young Republicans or something like that. I think they would prefer that he didn't.
You?
Just not talked about too much.
But as far as I can gather, you're saying that you believe that policemen should have political rights and that they should have the right to exercise. Is that correct?
Yes, I think they should. But I would like to say something else.
Surely.
I wouldn't compare, this is my opinion, of course, I don't compare with the John Birch Society with the Communist Party on the other extreme. I compare it on the other extreme with the Americans for Democratic Action and that kind of trap. And I can't really understand for the life of me why there isn't just as much criticism of it, except for the controlled press, there is a John Birch Society.
What do you mean by controlled press, Margaret? Can I ask?
Just exactly what I said, because the only way that any other information can get to people is by what our spokesman so laughingly calls the comedy, and by the Liberty Lobby and Human Events, so on and so forth. We have to pay for it.
Margaret, would you be willing to say that this show is an open forum?
Yes, Yes, I certainly would, although I'm a little surprised. Well, I'm not really surprised at all. That this man would be one for the Methodist Church, but we won't go into that.
Well, tell me, do you feel that this is part of the press of the United States?
The radio, this program specifically?
Yeah, right.
No, not really.
So we're not part of the press. So we're different.
No, you're not different. I'm speaking mainly about the newspaper.
Well, we have a few minutes remaining, and we have another caller. But, Margaret, I'd like to remind you that we did have Mr. Max Rafferty from California, who I believe is known as a very conservative man in California.
I wish I had heard him.
And he was very interesting. Our point here is to allow all forms, all opinions, as long as they're put out responsible, to be heard on Night Call. And I want to thank you for your comments. They've been most interesting, Margaret. Good night. Miss Margaret Harmon from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. And I think if we hurry, we have time for one more caller, listener on KTLN from Boulder, Colorado, Angela Park. Hello, Angela. Your comment, please.
I'm very happy to hear the speaker that you've been talking with this evening. Am I speaking loud enough?
Real well, ma'am.
And I think you haven't had more callers in because you and he managed to keep such an... Just a minute, let me turn the radio down. I'll be bothering you. Managed to keep such an interesting interchange going that we didn't need to ask questions.
Thank you, you're very kind.
My father was a dead socialist, so Mr. Hannon, you know how happy I am at your ideas and the fact that you are that, what's the word I want? I can't think of it. It's unusual for you to be a policeman.
Well, I'm glad your father was a member of our party. I wish you were.
Angela, I want to thank you for your comments. Our time's just about up.
Well, I'd like to ask just something else.
Can you make it fast, Angela?
Yeah. Could you give me 30 seconds?
I can give you 30 seconds.
You can answer yes or no to it.
Okay.
In a little paper, which is telling about the police action in Watts, it's mentioned that a man by the name of... Let me see here.
Angela, your 30 seconds are up. You're going to have to call us another night on Night Call and get that in. But thank you for calling us.
I could just ask it this way. Are the things you might see in some of the liberal political papers, like the John Birchers and the other side, of incidents that happened, were they true?
I don't know. There's been an immense amount of different stories.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt because it's time. Angela, thank you for calling Night Call. And that was a lady from Boulder, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. And, Mike, I'm sorry we don't have time for you to answer her question, but we're really pressed. Our guest tonight, Mr. Michael Hannon.
And our topic, How a Policeman Faces Crime. Thank you for being our guest. Tomorrow night, we continue our investigation of crime. Our guest will be Mr. Carl Perrin, Staff Director, U.S. Senate, Juvenile Delinquency Committee. Our topic, should we control the sale of guns? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.